You know what time it is. It's time for Ask a Spaceman. I'm your host, Paul Sutter. You've got questions and I've got answers. You know how this show works, but let's rotate around this subject one more time. You go online to Twitter or Facebook. Use the hashtag Ask a Spaceman. Send me questions and I will send you answers delivered directly to your ear twice a month. You can also follow me directly on Facebook and Twitter. My name is at Paul Matt Sutter. You can also go to askaspaceman.com. There you'll see all the show notes, all the links, all the good stuff. And you can also email directly at askaspaceman@gmail.com. We have one simple goal with this show: complete knowledge of time and space. And on the road to complete knowledge of time and space, we have today's questions. We've got three of them at Censored No More asking from Twitter, what's up with the axis of evil? Peter B. email, what determines the orientation between the solar system and the galaxy? And Hayward Z. on email, is there a preferred plane for the solar system? Very intriguing questions, and I have to admit this is going to be kind of a strange episode. It's strange because it's going to be based on statistics, and there is nothing wrong with statistics, but I usually avoid the nuts and bolts kind of meat grinder part of the physics. You know, the part in between, hey, I have a brilliant idea, and here's my beautiful result. There's a bunch of stuff in between that gets you from brilliant idea to beautiful result, and I usually skip that part because it's messy. It's like grinding meat. All right, there's gristle and there's gears and there's some ugly, ugly stuff that you don't usually enjoy watching. But this episode is all about that meat grinder. It's about all the very, very subtle signals that are buried in the data that can only be teased out by deep analysis. It's there that this subject of the axis of evil comes up. And at the heart of the episode, the very core of this episode is mediocrity. Mediocrity. Here's a phrase for you. Something to say to your friends. Maybe you're on a first date. Here we go. You're on a first date and you want to impress your date with something smart. You can say, planet Earth is mediocre. And then just stare at them for a while to let it sink in. I think that'll work great. It's been a while since I've been on a first date, but I'm pretty sure that is a winning strategy. Planet Earth just isn't very special. Yeah, it's got water and heartbreak and cheese, but it doesn't have a privileged position in the universe. There's nothing special about our particular vantage point or our particular location. We're just a blip. We're just a piece of the universe that on average isn't very different from any other part. This is actually a fundamental tenet of modern cosmology. This is a part of the way we understand the universe. And it was started, of course, by Copernicus, the first guy to propose that the Earth isn't at the center and not get immediately laughed out of the room. Yes, he was criticized. Yes, he was talked about, he raised the discussion, but at least he wasn't laughed out of the room. So another name for this principle of mediocrity is the Copernican principle, which sounds way more fancy and much less morose than the principle of mediocre, that the Earth is mediocre. This principle, like I said, is a major tenet of cosmology. It's a major fundamental part of our view of the universe. And it's borne out by two assumptions that we incorporate into the very mathematics that describe the universe. The mathematics that we use to describe the universe in cosmology at the very largest scales is, of course, general relativity. Good old Albert and his fancy math equations are what we use to describe the universe. Its growth, its history, its origins, its evolution, blah, 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 blah. If it's about the universe, general relativity is the name of the game. But we need to simplify it because the mathematics of general relativity, the actual equations, are hideously, frighteningly complicated. They are just hard to work with. It is not an easy thing to grapple. It's 10 different equations that are nonlinear, that are coupled to each other, that interact in very strange ways. It's a tough set of equations. It is not for the faint of heart. All right, this is general relativity is the deep, dark jungle of mathematics. And in order to make the mathematics something more solvable, to make them amenable, you have to beat them down. And the only way to beat down those mathematics are with simplifying assumptions, where you're just going to say, okay, I'm not going to try to solve all 10 equations of general relativity all at the same time, because no thank you. I'm going to make some assumptions about the situation that I'm looking at to make life easier, so I can knock out terms, so I can take away equations, so I can ignore parts of it, so I can actually get some work done. And when we apply general relativity to the whole entire universe, we make two very important simplifying assumptions. One, that the universe is homogeneous. That the universe, on average, is pretty much the same from place to place. Yes, of course, you and me are very different. And the Earth is very, very different than the Sun. And the Sun is very, very different than the galaxy. And our galaxy is very different from another galaxy. And the patch around our galaxy, the volume of the universe around our galaxy, is very, very different than a random patch that's, say, in the middle of a deep void or the center of a cluster of galaxies. But at the very largest scales, at around 800 million light year, around 200 million parsec, if you prefer parsec, which you ought to, prefer parsec over light year because you're well acquainted with modern sophisticated astronomical terminology. It's around when you start drawing boxes. If you just take a random patch of the universe, a random box of the universe, that's about 200 million parsec on a side, that patch is about the same as any other patch of that size. It's at that scale where all the differences in the universe, like galaxies, don't look anything like voids. It's where all that kind of gets smoothed over and the statistics start to, well, homogenize. It's homogenized milk. It just looks the same. If you take a patch of milk, it looks pretty much the same as any other patch of milk. But if you zoom down into the molecule scale, if you draw a random box, take a random patch, and your patch is very, very small. Your box is very, very small. That box might contain a molecule, and then you draw another one and there's no molecule and it looks very, very different. It doesn't look homogeneous at all. But if you take, say, a cup of milk, well, a cup of milk looks pretty much the same as any other cup of milk. You don't really worry about the differences between one cup of milk and another cup of milk because it's homogeneous at that scale. So the universe is a lot like milk. This might be the worst analogy I've ever made. I know there's a few top contenders. This is pretty far up there, I think. The universe is a lot like milk. If you take a cup of the universe, and if your cup is large enough, if it's 200 million parsec on a side, that cup looks pretty much the same as any other cup at that size. The universe is homogeneous. The universe is also isotropic. Isotropic means it looks about the same in any direction. Pick a random direction. You can look left, look right, look up, look down. Of course, again, at small scales and in cosmology, if you're the size of a galaxy, you're small. If I look down, I see dirt. If I look up, I see sky. The Earth is not isotropic. But if I look deep into space, millions of light years, and then I pick another random direction and look millions of light years, then statistically, those two directions look pretty much the same. Like on average, they look pretty much the same. The universe is both homogeneous and isotropic. Those are assumptions we bake into the mathematics of general relativity to make life simple so we can actually do calculations, so we can actually make predictions and get work done. Of course, we tested those assumptions. And we're still continuing to test those assumptions. We don't just pretend that that must be the way the universe is. All evidence points to those two assumptions being correct. We can move forward with general relativity and make life easy. And I'm going to talk a lot about the isotropic nature of the universe. And to get a sense of what I'm going to talk about, because this is where we get into things like the axis of evil. If you have a clear, dark sky available to you, go and check it out. You see some stars, you see some nebula, you might see the Milky Way spread across. It's very, very beautiful and elegant and blah, blah, blah. Say you live in the Northern Hemisphere. Take a trip down south. Go to the Southern Hemisphere and check out the night sky. Yeah, they're different. Like, the stars are in a different position. One sky might, you might be able to see the Andromeda Galaxy and you can't in the other. One night sky, you might see a star near the pole. The other, you don't. The constellations look a little bit different. There's different collections of nebula, but statistically, they're pretty much the same sky. You can imagine doing some sort of fancy mathematical test, like the average number of stars per unit area, or the average distance between nebula, or whatever. And the statistics of the northern sky and the southern sky should be roughly the same. And you can extend this. If the entire northern hemisphere is roughly the same as the entire southern hemisphere, or if they're different, you can measure their difference with some statistical measure. Then you can take a smaller patch. Well, if I take a patch of yay size and I compare that to random patches of the same size, are they the same? Are they different? Are they a little bit different? If they are different, by how much are they different? And we can develop a mathematical language to quantify that difference. So if I take ever smaller patches and compare what's going on in that patch to a random patch of the same size taken from a different place on the sky, I need a way to quantify that. I need a way to say just how different it is. And here is where the meat grinder comes in. The meat grinder is something called the multipole expansion. Not multiple expansion, like multiplication and division, multipole. It's a process for breaking down the sky into smaller and smaller chunks and looking at the statistics of those chunks. So the first step is to take an average of everything on the sky. Like every single star, every single bit of light, whatever you're trying to measure, you're going to take your average across the entire sky. That's called the monopole or the first pole. It's just a number. It's just an average. Then let's say you split the sky into a hemisphere. Any hemisphere will do, like top and bottom, left and right, sideways and anti-sideways. It doesn't matter. There are two poles here. That's a dipole. I should mention you don't have to use this on just the sky. I'm using the sky as a metaphor. You could say, take the global average of landmass across the whole Earth, the total amount of landmass on the Earth, that's your monopole. Then you can compare the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere, there's a dipole, or the eastern hemisphere to the western hemisphere, there's another dipole. The monopole and dipole, these ways of breaking up the sky into smaller and smaller chunks, the monopole and dipole are pretty easy to visualize. But then you get, say, the quadrupole, because you can keep going. That's four poles. So that's like splitting the sky top and bottom, and then each of those gets split left and right. On the globe, you could be measuring the northeast, the northwest, the southeast, and the southwest. And the question you're trying to answer when you're looking at monopoles or dipoles or quadrupoles, if say we take the quadrupole, if you take a quarter of the sky in a random spot, how different is it from any other quarter of the sky? Or the dipole, if I take half the sky or random half of the sky, how different is it from any other random half of the sky? Okay, that's not so bad. And then you get the octopole, or the hexadecapole, or the dotriacontopole. I have no idea if I pronounced that right. I don't even remember. You get the idea. There's lots of poles. Four poles, eight poles, 16, 32. Lots and lots and lots and lots of poles. Each higher multipole representing a smaller and smaller chunk on the sky that you want to study. And you might be wondering how this discussion of multipoles, of studying smaller and smaller chunks in the sky, has anything to do with the isotropy of the universe. And it comes in two ways, because really what we're going to study here, when we're doing this kind of multiple expansion, we don't care about stars, we don't care about galaxies, we don't care about clusters of galaxies, we care about the cosmic microwave background. We care about that early light, that ancient light from 13.8 billion years ago. The cosmic microwave background surrounds us. It sits on a shell surrounding us. It appears all around us on the sky. And when we look at the cosmic microwave background, if you recall from the two and a half parter series on the CMB, it's totally uniform to one part in 10,000. The universe is isotropic. If I take a random chunk of the CMB and another random chunk of the CMB, they're identical up to one part in 10,000. So when I say we've tested that the universe is isotropic, boom, there's your answer. There's the evidence. One part in 10,000, the CMB looks exactly the same no matter where you look. One part in 10,000. But this is a meat grinder episode. We're going to go past one part in 10,000. We're going to examine those tiny, tiny, tiny differences, those very minute variations. And we're going to use the technology of the multipole expansion to describe those differences. So yes, the universe is isotropic. Yes, the CMB looks exactly the same, no matter where you look, to one part in 10,000, but it is different at one part in 10,000. And we're going to use the multipole expansion technique to describe and understand those differences. So we're going to look at the CMB as a whole, the monopole, that's its temperature. We're going to look at the dipole. We're going to look at the quadrupole. We're going to look at the octupole. We're going to go on and on and on, smaller and smaller patches. If I look at the CMB, if I look at a patch that's yay big, say at the octupole level, what are the statistics of patches that big? How different is that patch different than any other patch of the same size? We measure the monopole, that's the average temperature. We measure a dipole. The CMB is hotter on one side than the other, and that's because we're moving through it. We're moving with respect to the cosmic microwave background. So it's almost like we have a breeze or a headwind. We're feeling the CMB a little bit hotter because we're pushing towards it. We're moving towards it in one direction at around 200 kilometers per second, I think is the number, somewhere around there, is our speed relative to the cosmic microwave background. And because we're moving through it, the light from that gets squished a little from a little Doppler effect. So it's hotter on one side, colder on the other. That's the dipole. But we can look at higher poles. And for the most part, everything is hunky-dory, A-OK. Just like you would expect in an isotropic universe. If I take a patch of a certain size, it looks pretty much like a patch of the same size anywhere else. But something tricky comes in, something a little sneaky and something unexpected. These multipoles, the dipole, the quadrupole, the octupole, the on and on and onopole, have certain orientations. And it's easiest to visualize with the dipole. The CMB is hotter on one side and cold on the other. Boom, there's the dipole. Where in space, what direction do you have to look at to see the hot end is random. I couldn't tell you if you were to just ask me, hey, Paul, don't ask me this. If you were to ask me, hey, Paul, what constellation should I look at? What direction on the sky should I look to see where the dipole is, where the CMB is hotter and where it's colder. Without doing that measurement, I couldn't tell you. It'd just be any random direction because we live in an isotropic universe. Because there is no preferred direction in our universe, the hot end could be anywhere. It turns out it is in a particular direction, but it could have been anywhere with any other chance. And if I look at the quadrupole, if I break the sky into quarters, then two of the quarters of the CMB will be hotter and two will be colder. But the orientation of that pattern should be random too. The dipole will point in one direction, the quadrupole will point in another, the octopole will point in another, the on and on and on, whatever a pole should also be, they should all be in random locations because that's what it means. That's also what it means to live in an isotropic universe. One part of isotropic universe means that on average, the CMB is the same temperature everywhere we look. It is the same to one part in 10,000, so check mark. Another is when I start to look at these detailed variations, when I do the meat grinder, and I start breaking the sky into smaller and smaller chunks and say, hey, what's the hottest spot on scales this size? Now, what's the hottest spot on scales this size? And the hottest spot on scales this size? Those should all be in totally random directions, should be all over the place, and they are. All the way from the dipole to the 4,000 pole, we don't have a name for that one, just 4,000 pole, all these different axes are all over the place, totally random, except the quadrupole and the octopole are very close to each other. They align with each other. They're only a few degrees away from each other. I should emphasize these are very, very small temperature variations, like 35 microkelvin differences in the temperature. But the chances of having the quadrupole and the octopole, these patches on the sky, these temperature variations being lined up with each other are very, very small, less than 1%. Less than 1%, we would expect these to just happen by random chance. And it gets worse. If I look at the cosmic microwave background and I compare that to the solar system itself, something strange pops up. Above the plane of the solar system is slightly cooler than below the plane. So if I go out in space, which is where our main cosmic microwave background measurements are, our observatories are, they're out in space. I look up, I look one direction out of the solar system, and I look in the opposite direction below the solar system, and there's a little temperature difference. Not much. It's still statistically significant. It's still there. It's not very strong, but it's there. It's something we've measured. And this asymmetry, this anisotropy, this not isotropic nature, this very, very slight difference where above the plane of the solar system looks slightly different than below the plane, that lines up with the quadrupole and the octopole. So first off, when we're looking at these smaller and smaller patches of the CMB and we're doing this statistical analysis, there's this odd coincidence between these two statistical measures. Like if you just want to forget like this whole lead up where I'm trying to explain multiple analysis and all that, you can just forget about that and just say we're doing statistical analysis and we do two separate statistical analyses that should be totally disconnected from each other and they turn out to be relatively the same. They point in the same direction on the sky. That's weird. And it's weirdly aligned with our solar system. That's messed up. That's messed up because, one, the octopole and the quadrupole should be totally different. There's no reason, and it's very, very unlikely that they're just aligned due to random chance. And the cosmic microwave background should have nothing to do with our solar system. The cosmic microwave background was generated 13.8 billion years ago. It wasn't even a twinkle in the eye of the Milky Way. There wasn't even a Milky Way. What is going on? Why is the cosmic microwave background somehow sort of aligned with our solar system? At one part in 10,000, at one part in 100,000, is something there that is aligned with our solar system? This is called, cheekily, the axis of evil. The reference for this, in case you don't know, back in 2002, President George W. Bush gave his State of the Union address, and he identified a political axis of evil, Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. These are countries that do not contribute to patreon.com/PM Sutter to help keep the show going. There was also some other stuff, but mostly they were identified as the axis of evil because they did not contribute to the Patreon for this show, unlike you. You are not a part of the Axis of Evil because you do a great job helping to keep the show going. And a couple years later, there is this apparent weird alignment observed in the cosmic microwave background. So there's the cosmological Axis of Evil, which is the weird lineup between the quadrupole, the octupole, and the plane of the solar system. It was first spotted back in 2005 using the WMAP probe, the Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe, spacecraft mostly funded by NASA. They were the first ones to spot it, this kind of weird alignment in the data. But everyone's like, hey, just calm down, guys. You know, random chance. Maybe we did something wrong with our instrument. There's some subtle bug that we didn't spot. Let's just not worry about it. So then we launched the Planck satellite. The European Space Agency launched the Planck satellite. And in 2013, returned its first set of data. And it was still there. Quadrupole was still aligned with the octupole and was still aligned with the plane of the solar system. Not as strong. The signal got a little bit weaker. You know, we got a little bit better at the statistics, but it was still there. What's going on? It's definitely not anything in the spacecraft. It's definitely not anything in the instrument itself, because we saw it with two completely different missions built by different people at different times with different technologies. Is there junk between us and the cosmic microwave background? Well, yeah, there's lots of junk. I mean, that light that left 13.8 billion years ago, it had quite a journey getting to our instruments and our telescopes. So yeah, it, you know, went through galaxies, it went through gas clouds. But none of that still doesn't know anything about the solar system. You know, a distant galaxy halfway to the edge of the observable universe doesn't know about our solar system. So is there something in our solar system? Something around our solar system? Like, is there a big patch of dust at the southern end of our solar system for some reason? But no other instrument sees any evidence for anything like that. Our solar system's pretty clean. Our solar neighborhood's pretty clean and well understood. Is it something funny happening to the universe itself? Maybe the universe isn't isotropic the way we thought. Maybe we're not so mediocre. Maybe we do have a privileged position in the universe, a unique vantage point. That seems odd. All other evidence points to us being totally mediocre and not special. It's just this one little weird line that says maybe we are a little special. Is it new physics? You know, we have these assumptions that we've tested that the universe is homogeneous and isotropic. It's a bedrock of modern cosmology. Maybe we're doing cosmology wrong. Maybe general relativity isn't appropriate. Maybe we're misunderstanding something fundamental about the Big Bang. And something funny is happening in the early universe that causes an asymmetry, that causes this weird lineup. That doesn't explain the alignment with the solar system. You might invoke, say, hey, you know what? This is the path to new physics. This is the path to revelation, to a new understanding of the way the universe works. You might use the alignment of the octupole and quadrupole as evidence that, hey, maybe there's new physics beyond what we know. But that doesn't explain the alignment with the solar system. You can't invoke early universe exotic string theory-esque theories to explain an alignment between the cosmic microwave background and our solar system. That's not how it works. Maybe it's nothing? I mean, these measurements aren't exactly easy. They do have large uncertainty. humans being humans, we like to find patterns in the data. There's bound to be just random coincidences and flukes in the data. Maybe the quadrupole and octupole are just lined up. You know, it's less than 1% chance, but hey, someone's got to win the lottery. And they just happen to line up. Maybe the alignment with the solar system. Hey, some people win the lottery twice. And that's just the way the universe is. Maybe we're just chasing after ghosts here. Maybe it's just an odd random coincidence and we should just totally forget about it. We don't know. We just don't know. We don't understand everything about the universe. I know, big surprise. Is the axis of evil, I can't resist saying it like that, the axis of evil something to worry about? Personally, I'm not too stressed out about it. It's something that we need to keep an eye on and follow up cosmic microwave background missions. We haven't mined all the data out of existing data sets. There's still new missions that we could fly to eke out, squeeze out some more information. It could be something that just goes away. Maybe it is a random statistical fluke. Maybe it does point the way to new physics. Maybe it does point the way to some understanding something about the nature of our own backyard and the solar system and the way it interacts with the cosmic microwave light that passes through it. I'm not too stressed out about it, about, you know, crumbling the foundations of modern cosmology. But something to keep an eye on. And I have no good segue to the next part, so I'll just dive right in about, you know, we have this discussion of alignments. There seems to be this weird, incredibly subtle alignment with our solar system with this weird feature in the cosmic microwave background. Something to keep an eye on. Are there any other special alignments? Well, the Earth itself is tilted at 23 degrees with respect to the solar system. The solar system itself is tilted at 60 degrees with respect to the galaxy, but you might expect everything to be roughly lined up. After all, the galaxy collapsed into a disk, and all the disk is spinning around and collapses in on itself to make like little solar systems, and then the planets coalesce out of that little solar system disk. You might expect everything to be lined up like nested Marushka dolls or something, and all spinning and pointing the same way. But they're not, because the processes that form solar systems, the processes that form planets, are complex and convoluted. It's very, very complicated physics, and just little tweaks in complicated physics can have big consequences. You know, solar systems are basically scattered all over the place, and they have all sorts of different random alignments, which means the mystery of the connection between the cosmic microwave background, quadrupole, and octupole in the plane of our own solar system is doubly worrisome, because the formation of our solar system itself was such a chaotic, random process that there should be no memory from the early years. There's just no connection from 13.8 billion years ago to the particular orientation of our solar system. We really are mediocre. There is no, we're at this direction, at this angle relative to the galaxy, for no reason in particular. There might be, however, some larger alignments, but in order to tease out the alignments, we have to look at the entire cosmic web. You know, the largest structure in the universe is made of galaxies. It was formed kind of piecemeal. It started as a uniform cloud billions of years ago, collapsed into two-dimensional sheets. Some of these sheets collapsed into one-dimensional filaments, and then some of these filaments started intersecting and filling in to make the clusters of galaxies. It left behind the great cosmic voids, called great because they're large and also because they're awesome, by the way. And I need to talk about that process, the formation of the cosmic web, the formation of galaxies in another episode. We do think there might be some residual memory of the formation of the evolution of the cosmic web in the orientations of galaxies themselves. For example, galaxies might line up along filaments. Clusters might get squashed along particular directions. Galaxies that border the great voids may point inwards towards them, et cetera, et cetera. We see it kind of clearly, pretty clearly, in simulations, but nothing super conclusive in the data yet. So the conclusion is that there are no special alignments within our universe, except for the axis of evil. And I find it best to say it over dramatically and with the maniacal laugh. The axis of evil. I'll stop. Sorry. I'd like to thank my top Patreon contributors this month, Helgi B, Justin G, Justin R, Kevin O, Jessica K, and Michael Z. It's your contributions and all the contributions of everyone participating in Patreon that keeps this show going and, in fact, keeps all my education and outreach going. You can go to patreon.com/PM Sutter for more details. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to @CensoredNoMore, Peter B, and Hayward Z for the questions that got me talking about the axis of evil. I won't do it again. I will spare us both. You can go keep asking those questions. AskTheSpaceman.com, AskTheSpaceman@gmail.com. Follow me Twitter and Facebook @PaulMattSutter. And I will see you next time for more complete knowledge of time and space.